There are so many issues throughout all levels of government that smart Christians need to view it as a way to care for our neighbor by making good decisions.
Molly Hemingway talking about her joint presentation with her husband, Mark, at the 2020 Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The federal government has gotten much more involved in family formation or family destruction, abortion, other issues. And there are so many ways in which it's important for us to think about how we can defend the weak and vulnerable among us by making good decisions.
You can watch journalists Molly and Mark Hemingway making the case for Christian political engagement at this year's Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, July 24th and Saturday, July 25th. The $135 registration fee includes the ability to watch a live stream and a recording. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. I think we can say disappointed, shocked, surprised with the Supreme Court's recent decision regarding the meaning of the word sex in the 1964 Civil Rights Act. Few people expected that decision. How did they come to the decision that the word sex includes? Well, in the end, anything anyone wants to say sex includes by way of their gender or their orientation or their self-identification. That's got broad implications, and none of them are good. So what does a defense of the traditional binary view of male and female do going forward, especially in the political realm where laws are made? We're going to be talking about that. Joining us to do so, Hadley Arkus. He's professor emeritus of jurisprudence and American institutions at Amherst College, founder and director of the James Wilson Institute on Natural Rights and the American Founding, and he's author of several books, including Natural Rights and the Right to Choose, and a recent column for The Federalist titled, Here's the Only Path Open to Republicans After Neil Gorsuch's Betrayal. Dr. Arkus, welcome back.
Well, thank you. Jeff said it was good to hear my voice. It's certainly good to hear your voice, Todd. Long while.
Were you surprised at the Supreme Court's recent decision regarding the meaning of that word sex in the 1964 Civil Rights Act?
Well, that's a little shocked, staggered, but the point is, the problem is, we've had several months in which to brace ourselves for this because the news was leaking out to us. The news, things don't usually leak from the Supreme Court. But obviously, Gorsuch's shift was stirring a sense of emergency in the quarters of the court, probably among the clerks. So news was getting out to us a few months ago, and of course we were thinking, can't anyone talk with him? I talked with a couple of his close friends and who confirmed that what I heard was true, that he was going to be making the switch. And they said, no, we can't plausibly talk to him now. You just can't. One was the judge, we just can't talk with him while the case is under review, while it's still in the works. So the only people who could talk with him would be his old colleagues. It would be Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito. So I could just imagine, I know them both, and I could just imagine what kind of frustration they were having, because I'm sure it wasn't going to work. It was a staggering view. It was one of the most radical views to come down here, because as he said, it very early, in his opinion, he said that the one who had been known to the world and his wife as Anthony Stevens, of course, it's now referred to as Amy Stevens, and all the pronouns were in the feminine, that she had applied. She had indicated that she had been a female, that she had applied for the job. He had clearly been absorbing the very predicate of the argument that in her own eyes, but now the mother of that in the eyes of the law is prepared to treat Stevens as a female if that is indeed how he regarded himself. And that it would be wrong for anyone to turn away from him, not in the kind of a sex now, at the point you were making in the introduction, not in the kind of a sex, but in his own understanding of his sexual persona, what he thought he conceived his sex to be. And, you know, as our friends Michael Hanby and David Crawford and Maggie McCarthy at the John Paul II Institute said, it engaged here was not simply Stevens's freedom to dress as he pleased and present himself as a woman. What was engaged here was the confirmation in the eyes of the law that he had indeed become a woman in the eyes of the law, and that everyone around him would be obliged to confess that understanding, to admit that understanding, to address him by a female pronoun. And if people didn't do that, they could put themselves at hazard. They could be charged with helping to preserve a hostile work environment for him. They would put themselves and their employers at legal hazard. This is surely must stand as one of the most radical decisions ever handed down with the presumption of a legal body, the Supreme Court. As our friends have pointed out, it transforms everything. But after this, you might say, we're all transgendered now. What is the child supposed to think about her own parents and relatives, brothers and sisters, that there's no fixed definition to their sexual beings, or that their so-called sexual persinae are things that they could be able to alter with the mere assertion of their will or feeling? This would be the abolition of man, so to speak, but through the gentle device of a decision handed down by a court.
How do you respond to the majority's argument, which is summarized thusly? An employer who fires an individual for being homosexual or transgender fires that person for traits or actions it would not have questioned in members of a different sex. Sex plays a necessary and undisguisable role in the decision, exactly what Title VII of the Civil Rights Act forbids. What do you make of that argument?
Well, it's a clever play in dancing around the central truth of the meaning of sex and meaning of the statute. The statute banned the discrimination based on sex. They were shifting it now to say, you're drawing away from him, backing away, recoiling from him, and withdrawing benefits from him, not because of his sex, whether he's a male or female, but because of his ideas about himself, his sexual preferences, you might say. That's something quite different. You could do this in a couple of ways. You could say, let's look at what the statute meant and how discrimination on the basis of sex was understood. Samuel Alito, in his dissenting opinion, laid it out. You know, the Western states, Wyoming and others, are very early barring discriminations on the basis of sex in access to education. They're opening these spaces for women, barring discrimination against women. In the case of the 19th Amendment, barring discriminations based on sex in the franchise, in votes, it was to discriminations against women. We had a pretty clear sense of what sex involved. And here there's an interesting argument between, part of my argument with the people doing conservative jurisprudence who call themselves textualists. We say, how was this text understood in 1964? And of course, nobody understood that you're barring discriminations against gays or lesbians as there's a bar against objecting to people because of their sexual orientation. No, it didn't cover that. And it certainly didn't include anything like gender identity. There's no notion of that at the time, as I recall. But the point I would be raising is it goes beyond the matter of looking at the dictionaries and how people understood at the time. The question, strictly speaking, is what is it that we must mean by the notion of sex? Now, if you forgive me, the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith, when it was Cardinal Ratzinger in charge, put it, there's not always been an Italy or a Hungary, but if there are to be human beings, there must be males and females. What defines them is the way their bodies are organized for reproduction as males and females. There will always have to be males and females. That is the thing that marks the very telos, the purpose of sex in the strictest sense. And that is the hardest meaning and most objective meaning that must attach to it. You get on slippery grounds when you move away from that. Everything else they're offering is a radical shift away from the hard meaning of sex in the strictest sense, the biological sense. And after that, you're simply a matter of shifting to my conception of myself, how I see myself, how I see my sex, quite apart from my body. This is all quite slippery, but it's a remarkable thing to think. I mean, we had a case a while ago, didn't we, just a couple of years ago, of this woman on the West Coast who was a member of some leadership group in the National Association of Colored People. Turned out she wasn't black, but she felt strongly that she was black. And that became risible. People thought it was ludicrous that she could make that claim, and it wasn't taken seriously. But why should it be taken any more seriously than someone says, well, I don't feel like a male or female, as though your feeling about the matter was any more amenable to your sexual identity. Your own sex as male or female could actually be altered by the way you feel about it. From every angle, it's one of the most radical steps we could take. After all, the American regime, America was founded on an understanding of natural rights, rights that arose for human beings by nature. No man has by nature the rule of other men, and the way men are must by nature be the rules of dogs and horses. And that will hold true wherever in the world that nature remains the same. So now we've reached the point we're not even clear what a human being is. We've had this with abortion. And now we're not clear what a man and a woman is. And we're seeing here feminists who are getting quite alarmed by this because they've marked off a whole domain of women's privileges and women's rights that are all predicated on the notion that there is some kind of ontological reality of women. There is really an identifiable class of human beings out there that you can know and identify reliably, recognizably, as women. Well, Todd, I'm afraid you may have set off one of my oracular detonations. I probably tell you more than you wish to know. Have I glided past your point in doing all of this?
No, not at all. We'll have more with Hadley Arkus on the other side of this break. We're talking about a conservative response to the Supreme Court's ruling on transgender employees. Going forward politically, we can take a lesson from Abraham Lincoln and how he responded to the Dred Scott case. We'll hear more about that next.
We need people who are well-educated enough to know what the Constitution means, what it says, how its principles work.
Dr. Robert George of Princeton University talking about his presentation on the Constitution and civic virtue at this year's virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
We need people who are willing to fight for those principles, to call out politicians, whether they're liberal or conservative, whether they are Democratic or Republican, when they transgress against the Constitution. We need a people who are fit for liberty and fit for the rule of law under a Constitution like ours, a Republican polity like ours, established under the Constitution. So I'm really going to be talking about civic virtue and its relationship to constitutional structures and principles.
You can watch Dr. Robert George's presentation at the 2020 Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 24th and Saturday, July 25th. Conference registrants can watch live and on demand. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive Word and Sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide Word and Sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is lcmschaps@lcms.org.
Ad Crucem is home to numerous artists dedicated to producing high-quality Christian products. From Edriel Haas's paintings of biblical narratives, to Kelly Clage's Lutheran-themed jewelry, to Scapegoat Studios' liturgical banners, we strive to embody St. Paul's statement, "I decided to know nothing except Jesus Christ and Him crucified." Whether you're a part-time hobbyist or a full-time creator, Ad Crucem is interested in supporting your Christ-focused products. Please contact info@adcrucem.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc. In many ways, St. Matthew Lutheran Church in Bel Air, Maryland is just like any other Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Church. They have worship services each Sunday and reach out to their community, but one thing they don't do is pay their electric bill. Hello, this is Rahema Kavuga, Synod Relations Manager of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. And if you want to hear what St. Matthew actually did to eliminate their electric bill, just visit interesttime.org. That's interesttime.org.
The Substitute Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Hadley Arkus, Professor Emeritus of Jurisprudence and American Institutions at Amherst College, about a conservative response to the Supreme Court's ruling on transgender employees. Hadley, you refer us to how President Lincoln dealt with the Dred Scott case. What can we learn going forward in response to the most recent Supreme Court case?
One interesting thing you put in is Russ Hittinger, a good friend of mine, reminded me that Lincoln could not have raised his hand on March 4th, 1861, and taken an oath to the Constitution if he'd understood that the Dred Scott decision was now woven into that part of the Constitution, so it were woven into the text himself. It was a decision of the court, and the decision there was that there was a new constitutional right for people not to be dispossessed of their property in a slave when they entered into a territory of the United States, a territory, not yet a state, though Lincoln's argument is that, the logic of that decision will quickly be spread by its logic to the ordinary states, so that we would go to sleep in Illinois as a free state and wake up in Illinois as a slave state. And they also declare that black people could not launch the suit because they were never more than a servile population, having no rights that whites were obliged to respect. They had no standing as citizens to launch a suit. Now, Lincoln's position was he led a national movement to overturn that decision. And the strategy was that he and his Congress would act in the style of the political branches to try to contain, narrow, counter that decision. So as he put it in the course of his debates with Stephen Douglas, and in his first inaugural, he said, if a court decides Dred Scott to be a slave, we will not form a mob and free him. We will respect the decision of the court in regard to those litigants who made up the case. But if we are not persuaded by the principle articulated in the case, that there is a new right not to be dispossessed of property of slaves, that blacks cannot be citizens, if we are persuaded by that, we are not obliged to vote for any measure containing those premises and that principle and anything that comes under our hands, either as an executive or in Congress. And sure enough, when Lincoln got in, through administrative action and congressional action, they sought to contain that decision, to narrow it, to cut it back. And so for a couple notable cases, you had a black student in Boston denied a passport to study abroad in France because the court had, a branch of the State Department, invoked the Dred Scott decision and said the court had decided that blacks cannot be citizens, therefore they cannot carry passports. And the branch of the Patent Office decided also that a black inventor in Boston could not carry a patent because he could not be a citizen of the United States. Now, look, this is a perfect example. These were two instances quite distant from anything involved in the Dred Scott decision. We didn't have any slaves litigating about claiming their freedom. We had two branches of the federal government applying what they understood to be the principle in the Dred Scott case to circumstances far removed. And so Lincoln administration quashed both decisions. They issued the patent, they issued the passport, and the Attorney General, in the name of the administration, said it's the understanding of this administration that any black people born in the United States, are citizens of the United States. Congress passed a bill barring slavery from the Western territories of the United States, a bill that directly challenged the decision in Dred Scott. Well, if that's could be done, it could be done now. People forget that Democrats have done this in the past themselves. Things like the legislative veto, the provision where the executive may take some action, as in going to war, and the Congress may just give it 90 days and have 90 days in which to veto the action. The Supreme Court struck down the legislative veto in the case on immigration in 1982, the Chadha case. But the Democratic Congress has just kept enacting the legislative veto because they thought it was important to the War Powers Act, which they esteemed. So in other words, they were following the Lincolnian understanding. They did not respect the principle that the court handed down. They simply sought to restrict the holding of that case to a case on immigration. Now, this could be wrong only if Lincoln was wrong, and I just don't see any way under the Constitution for Lincoln to be wrong. And so right now, the current administration has done a number of things that could fit this pattern and be defended under it. Decision was made that under Obamacare, insurance companies would not be required to fund surgery to do a conversion, a transgendered conversion. We have a decision being made now at the Department of Education about teams to gather men from performing, from joining women's teams. And we'll have other provisions of this kind coming. Another one, from HUD, on women's shelters, to confine women's shelters in cities to real women and not to transgender women. I mean, we had that awful case that Julia Beck in Baltimore mentioned, got her kicked off the LGBT council in Baltimore when she refused to use a female pronoun for a man who professed to have been transgendered but had raped two women, was sent to jail, insisted on going to a female prison, and in prison raped two more women. And her offense was that she refused to, Julia Beck's offense was that she refused to use a female pronoun for this man. That's how rigid these people are getting. But anyway, going back to the constitutional scheme, what the administration is doing now in a variety of places, women's shelters, women's teams, refusing to require transgender surgery be covered and mandated under Obamacare, all of this is quite consistent with a strategy to refuse to accept the principle articulated in the case, in the Harris case in Bostock the other day. And this is a path that is quite defensible, and I don't hope myself that Congress would step in and give a little more force to it, that Congress could Congress in the past has made clear that the Title IX and sections of the Civil Rights Act that bar discrimination on the basis of sex will not threaten all female schools like Mount Holyoke, Smith, Wellesley. They can do something like this in regard to those schools again, bathrooms, and so on. But all this is just to remind people that it's part of the constitutional logic, not only the structure, but the logic, that the political branches have a role to play in interpreting the Constitution. You know, I used to say, we're doing the Defense of Marriage Act, and we're trying, back in 1996, we're trying to encourage the Congress to take its responsibilities here seriously and give some guidance to the court on the meaning of the full faith and credit. Remember, the concern at the time was that a same-sex couple could get married in Hawaii and then carry their marriage back to the mainland, and every state would be obliged to recognize it. So in this way, one state could indirectly nationalize same-sex marriage in this way. And we're trying to get Congress to step in to do this. And Congressman Frank, I said, I think this whole thing is unconstitutional. And I said, Congressman, you make our very point. We think that is a judgment for you to make. So that we point out, if a president of the United States were faced, say, with a bill to conscript people into military service, but to conscript only members of a minority race, would he simply be confined to the question of utility? Would this measure work? or would he not be obliged to consider as much as any judge would whether this measure coming under his hand was compatible with the principles of the Constitution? Well, that's, I think, all that Chief Justice Marshall was saying in the classic case of Marbury versus Madison, that a judge looking at a statute had to consider whether it was compatible with the Constitution, and he didn't say that was a job reserved to judges. It would be an obligation to flow to anyone else who was exercising authority under the United States. So I think, years ago, I remember with Father Newhouse in New York, we had Clarence Thomas in for a seminar, and Robert George, who's going to be out with you, and others, and I were just reviewing this Lincolnian understanding. And Justice Thomas had eyes wide open, and he said, "But nobody understands that anymore." We said, "But it is necessarily true. The logic of this just cannot be derailed. It can't be dislodged in the Constitution, and in fact, the liberals have made use of it quite often. So why are the conservatives so reluctant to use an approach to the Constitution that has been used so effectively and so handsomely in the past?"
Hadley Arkus is our guest. We're talking about a conservative response to the Supreme Court ruling on transgender employees. He's Professor Emeritus of Jurisprudence and American Institutions at Amherst College. On the other side, how can Congress narrow this court's decision, and does it give them an opportunity to see where everyone stands?
Things when I hear on the radio tonight about Obama being a Christian but not being good because of his pro-choice and homosexuality stances.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
"Yet I see no evidence of any literature that in the Bible that you stated that says that these things are against biblical teachings."
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
The Simply Classical curriculum for special needs moves at my child's pace and gives her exactly what she needs. So writes Amber, a homeschooling mother who has joined thousands in homes and schools teaching from this uniquely Christian classical approach to special education. Teach students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome based on ability level rather than chronological age. Use promo code LPR20 today at classicalspecialneeds.com. Classicalspecialneeds.com.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority, they've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we're going to continue our romp through Romans. Israel's remnant, jealous of Gentiles, Gentiles grafted in, mystery of Israel's salvation, and a living sacrifice. Join me, Pastor Will Whedon, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand at thewordendures.org and on the Lutheran Public Radio app.
We're getting a conservative response to the Supreme Court ruling on transgender employees with Hadley Arkus. He is Professor Emeritus of Jurisprudence and American Institutions at Amherst College and founder and director of the James Wilson Institute on Natural Rights and the American Founding. He had mentioned before the break, Dr. Robert George, another great legal mind of Princeton University. He will be speaking at the 2020 Virtual Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference. He'll be making the case for the Constitution and Civic Virtue. Conference registrants can watch the conference live and on demand. Learn more at issuesetc.org. The 2020 Virtual Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 24th and Saturday, July 25th. Hadley, some people are wondering whether or not Gorsuch himself may have opened a path in his decision, in his draft of his decision, for the political branches of the government to resist the underlying principle of his decision, because he mentioned there RFRA, the religious freedom law, and kind of opined that this was not brought under RFRA.
Right. Okay. But first, then, a couple of things. First, then, he'll ask the Rost family in the Harris case to give first a counterfeit view of themselves, to say, instead of saying, I'm working on the irrefutable proposition that the meaning of sex is grounded in objective truth in human nature, in order to fit the religious exemption, we have them say, I have this belief that sex is grounded in nature, in objective truth. Now, Justice Gorsuch and Alito managed to carve out a kind of relativist line now on religion, to say you can't restrict anybody, can't restrict any religious belief on the ground that it offends someone. And that's the way they covered Jack Phillips in the masterpiece Baker Cake, the man who refused to bake a cake for a same-sex wedding. But we wonder what would happen if we had a baker of the Bob Jones persuasion, the man who thinks that there is some ground in a biblical ground for the separation of the races, and he refuses to bake a cake for an interracial wedding. My hunch is that the court would not sustain that under a religious exemption. Now, my hunch then is that the people on the other side, especially if they take control of the executive and the Congress, the people on the other side will hold to the view that the wrong of turning away from people on the basis of transgenderism is as deeply wrong as the willingness to turn away from them on the basis of race, and therefore they will not be willing to give that kind of an exemption on the basis of religion. So I think that one is not going to work, and I think, you know, the same people who showed a willingness to try to impose upon the Little Sisters of the Poor or the Hobby Lobby fam, people, the evangelicals in the Hobby Lobby case, to impose on the religious an obligation to fund a contraceptives and abortifacients, I don't think these people will hesitate for a moment in the willingness to rip through the restraints of the RFRA Act and impose an obligation to get. Now, who knows, you may get through in a couple of cases. I know I have some friends who are trying to toe to the line of that Gorsuch's opinion may be rather comparable to what Mark Twain said of Wagner's music, that it's not as bad as it sounds, that he did not strictly say that Stevens had undergone a real transition across the field of objective truth and become a woman. But I think that's going to be a loser, because if you take a look at the case, he said we have a division between two parties. With one party that says that sex could be off, is malleable, depends on one's understanding. But the other one says, no, sex is very deeply entrenched. It's anchored in objective, inescapable truths about human nature, about our own natures. And I will not settle that question now, because I can reach this decision on wholly different terms, and that is that there was a turning away from Stevens because of his sexual persona, because of his understanding of himself. Well, the problem there is if Gorsuch really saw two different parties or two different views, one that's saying that the meaning of sex depends wholly on one's feeling and one's own sense of one's sexual identity, and another one that says, no, the meaning of sex is anchored in something inescapable and objective in human nature and the way we are constituted in our reproductive organs as made as male or female. if he says either one is plausible, then that's already the giveaway, because he's refusing to accept the truth of that second proposition. And if he begins by accepting the truth, denying the truth of a proposition that is just undeniable, that tells us we're in another realm. So I don't think we're going to see anything done within the courts that could offset this. Now, you're right. He did say, well, we haven't dealt with locker rooms and bathrooms and with teams. And Justice Alito properly said, this looks like a feint, because you've just established the principle that it's simply wrong to turn away from someone, to withhold a benefit or a privilege, because you have an aversion to the way in which he understands his sexual self. If that's the ground, then why should it not apply to the freedom to use the bathroom or a locked room of one's own choosing? Now, what would happen then, I guess, if this is open, then it gives him kind of a little leeway for young conservative clerks, judges rather, a new batch of conservative judges in the separate states, lower courts, to start putting up resistance to sort of protect bathrooms and locker rooms and women's teams here and there. Perhaps it gives us some leeway for that for a little while, but it's not likely to be sustained. If Gorsuch is willing to concede that people may be rightly uncomfortable in sharing the bathroom with people of who are really of another sex, if he can concede that there are people, if there's something plausible and legitimate about the discomfort that people would feel, they say, well, why couldn't you have felt that about the people in a funeral home, the people who just lost a loved one and were in this funeral home, and then they were suddenly confronted with the transgendered in a situation that could be quite unsettling for them. Why couldn't you have been just as sensitive to feelings at that point? So it's just hard to see how he can reconcile these two. But if judges can take hold of these things and cut it back and say, okay, we'll carve out a space for locker rooms and bathrooms and women's teams, who knows, we may produce a trend of decisions, applauded perhaps by the public along the way, with the movement gaining momentum. And if that happens, then the best thing that could happen here is that Harris case the other day could be reduced to a decision on one funeral home in Michigan. But my concern is, even if that were the case, the doctrine articulated, the principle articulated in that case will still be there unless something is done explicitly to revise it.
Hadley Arkus is Professor Emeritus of Jurisprudence and American Institutions at Amherst College. He's founder and director of the James Wilson Institute on Natural Rights and the American Founding. He's author of several books, including Natural Rights and the Right to Choose, and a recent column for The Federalist titled, Here's the Only Path Open to Republicans After Neil Gorsuch's Betrayal. Hadley, thank you very much for being our guest.
Oh, I was trying to finish right on the mark, Todd. Thanks so much.
You can read his column and purchase Natural Rights and the Right to Choose at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. We'll talk about the presentation of the Augsburg Confession next.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.